Yeah.
Well, let's officially welcome everybody to our conversation this morning. This is the 23rd of October, 2022. What am I talking about? I'm 1,000 years off or 100 years off. Anyway, we have been embarking through the early parts of the Book of Romans. And it has been interesting. And then if you were with us last week, you realized we really put on the waders and went in deep. And getting challenged with the age-old conflict of understanding how man operates in relation to God's sovereignty. Is there such a thing as free will? The text we were talking about was in Romans 1, 24, where it says that God has given them over. Given them over to what? And who does man have any choice about the matter? And where does choice happen? And is he able to choose on his own? We talked about how man is not free to make other than one of two choices. Either he chooses God or life, or he chooses death. Now, a man can wake up in the morning, decide which cereal he wants to eat, but the fact is he has no ability to choose beyond what's already been chosen for him. He is not free not to sin. He is a slave. We'll hopefully get more into man's position in God's economy this morning, but remember that the issue here goes back again to the garden and the initial couple faced with a challenge: which tree would they eat of? And of course, the story, as you know, is that they chose the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's some interesting things I want to share about what that means. And today I thought we would get more into the essence of the whole falsehood of what was the actual tree of knowledge and why was it so fateful for that couple and all of humanity after they made the choice. So today, when that first chapter, verse 25, I want you to follow here with me a little bit. Verse 24, of course, I just mentioned, wherefore God gives them over in the lust of their hearts to the uncleanness of dishonoring their bodies among themselves. Those who alter, and I want you to hear this, those who alter the truth of God into the lie. Now, the question this morning, what is the lie?
Anything they my altered wife the truth. With.
I'm sorry, Dave.
Anything my wife disagrees with.
And anyway,
moving on.
I vote for Dawn.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to sign off now.
Yeah, right. So, the lie, the origin of the lie. What do you?
Well, the lie, I would think, would go back to, how would I put this? The lie would go back to us being separated from God. But I think it's got to go back to the start of that, mm-hmm. how we became separated from God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I am so tempted to editorialize on best macho masculinity statement from a couple weeks ago, but I might hold off on that right now. anyway.
Sounds like we need a special session.
It was still his fault. Anyway, um, I guess we don't we have to look at it from the standpoint of why was the tree there in the first place?
Okay,
the tree of knowledge, the tree of life. Again, had the tree of knowledge not been there, would we have had a choice? And wouldn't we have just been basically little God robots? So don't we need to start with why was the tree there in the first place?
Yeah. And why weren't there multiple trees to choose from? And yet there are only two classifications. One tree was life and the other represented not life.
Well, technically, can't there only be one right answer and one wrong answer?
Yeah,
I mean, so. You can come up with a plethora of wrong answers, but there's still only one wrong right answer.
Exactly.
So, I think God realized we could screw things up with just two choices. He didn't need to add more.
But here's where it really gets deep, Dave. Did God intend the couple to choose that tree in order to understand what life was? You recall we've been talking about the law of opposites. Everything has its opposite. That's a universal law, and it's true of God himself.
Well, did he intend it? Because had Eve not listened to the serpent, and had Adam stepped up and said, "Shut your mouth, woman. This is what we're going to do."
I detect an underlying current here?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Could we have not still know? I mean, Adam already knew God.
Right. But did he really understand who he was?
Did he really need?
How could he know
really
who
need
he
to
was?
Go the route?
Right.
Well, see, I guess I have a hard time with the idea of did God intend for, because I mean, God, if he's all knowing, omnipotent, all these other good things. Could we have not known what we need to know without going the route we went?
Can you know what is bitter without tasting sweet?
Do I need to know what's bitter without, you know? I mean, see, what it comes down
to
is, did we really need to know that? So was it God's intention or was it just man's choosing their will?
Before the tree came along, they were wandering around in the garden with God, and it was a really good relationship. Are we implying that man was just a zombie walking around in the garden before the trees came, the tree issue? just not really knowing who he was and in La La Land.
Most guys would be really, really, really happy with that.
Yeah.
You know, walking around in La La Land, I think. You know, I guess, is it really important? Okay, I mean, trying to speculate on what could have, should have happened. It happened.
It happened.
Okay. So how do we now learn from what happened 6,000 years ago or 12 million years ago, depending on what science you look at?
So man is created or formed, let's say, he's formed out of the earth, God breathed into him, he became a living soul. It said he was formed in the image and the likeness of God. So in the likeness, God is a person. And how do you become a person? How are you? What is the qualifications to be a person?
Somehow a spirit, a soul, and a body.
Okay. And a soul, what's the soul imply? That you have, the soul is the manifestation of God in the spirit indwelling in dust, in dirt.
The emotion, the behavior.
Yeah. Mind, will, emotions. And all of those things imply that man has choice. He's able to look at his environment and his world and say, I like this, I don't like that. I prefer to do this. I prefer not to do that. So that's the essence of personhood is choice.
Doesn't God have choice? And if there is one self, are we not?
Does God have choice?
Isn't our choice within God's choice?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. God's all in all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But to have choice means that there has to be opposites.
Yeah.
And for Adam to understand his ability to choose, as he lived with God, walked in the garden before he fell, before the tree of knowledge, can you say that he really understood opposites?
Well, another question, does God understand opposites? Mm. And how does he understand opposites? Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
And that's a good leading question into maybe today or next week we can get into that. What does God's foreknowledge imply? So yeah, this is deep stuff. And it's fundamental though for us as we explore further into who we really are as persons, who has God created us to be, and what is our basic choice in life, right?
Well, as I was raised, as you know, in the Evangelical United Brethren, United Methodist, we were taught that man strayed in sin through Adam, but God wanted to have man come back on his own free volition or will or whatever to be with him through eternity. I don't know whether I buy all that anymore, but that's what I grew up.
Sure. Yeah, I share that with you, Arnold. That is the common theology in Western Christianity. And pretty much all of Christianity, but particularly Western Christianity, that follows what we've talked about in days past and months past of what we call Augustinian or Nicene Christianity. Okay, there's a distinction there. But anyway, man is faced with a choice. He sees an opportunity to somehow improve himself, I'll say it that way, or see on the opposite side of what he understands in his relationship to God. And what he sees is a very interesting thing in itself. And that's what I want to ask, if we understand that. But if you have your Old Testaments, you have your Bible, the narrative for us is recorded in Genesis 3. And trust that you kind of reviewed that. And by the way, does anyone here have a concordant literal Old Testament?
Yeah, I do.
You do, Dave?
Yeah.
Can you look at Genesis 3:22 in that text in a moment? I'd like to focus on that in a moment, Dave, but let me read the New King James in chapter 3, verse 4. And the serpent said to the woman, here's the question, what is the lie? What is the basis of the original lie? And the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. If you eat this tree, if you eat this tree, you will surely, will not surely die. Is that true?
Read that again.
Then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die.
That's interesting. The concordant is almost a little confusing.
Mm-hmm.
But the serpent said to the woman, not to die shall you be dying.
Ah.
For Elam knows that on the day you eat of it, your eyes will be unclosed, and you will become like Elam, knowing good and evil.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not to die shall you be dying.
Interesting play on the words, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. And so the King James tries to clean that up a little bit, maybe. And just making it shorter, you will not surely die. In other words, what I hear concordant saying is, in thinking you're alive, you actually are dying. That's what the essence of this, of the lie really is. It's a portion. This is one portion of the lie, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
There's a next portion that's to come. The first is, you're really not going to die. Why did Satan throw that back at Eve? What had God said would happen when they ate of the fruit of that tree?
So you'll die.
Or you will die.
Yeah. Or you shall not eat it or even touch it. Wow. Lest you die. You will die. So the serpent comes back and said, you will not surely die. For God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. The first part is, no, you're really not going to die, Eve. That's a blatant lie. And the second part of it is that you will be like God, knowing good and evil.
Okay, but consider the source of that statement.
Yes.
The serpent saying that.
Mm-hmm.
He's not very trustworthy, is he?
No. Good point.
In fact, he's a deliberate liar.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't wrong, though. I mean, they didn't die. Like, I always took that as, you know, literal. Like, you eat this,
you get zapped.
Yeah.
You're dead. Like, yeah. I will strike you down.
Yes. So death is an interesting thing to explore here in itself. What is he meaning by die? In fact, that's maybe what concordant is trying to bring out. You think you're living, but really you're not. You actually are dying. See, so yeah, your life mortally may be continuing on, but you are in a process of decay. You are going the opposite direction in the course of your life.
Well, I want to back up here real quick to something Arnold said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at the serpent, and you can draw some correlations today, of course, but when Adam and Eve were in the garden, only two people around,
mm-hmm.
everything had been created by God and everything was good. So why would they think that the serpent was bad?
Initially.
Because they didn't even know good from evil.
I don't think they did.
No.
So the serpent was as trustworthy as God. I mean, God created him. Well, why wouldn't he be trustworthy?
And in fact, you remember how he appears is very subtle. He doesn't appear to them as imperfect, as a deceitful liar or everything that's contrary to God. He in fact appears quite perfect, beautiful.
A gorgeous.
He is a masterful creation of God.
Yeah.
I think he was like this beautiful yellow python.
And my contention is that it was only until after God cursed him that he was thrown to the ground. So keep that in mind. He said, to the ground you shall go, and the dust of the earth you will eat. So what does that imply? Before he had shed the lie and God cursed him, his perfection, he must have been a beautiful creature of some kind. And the Bible calls him the serpent. It's kind of after the fact. Now we know he was serpent. So let's call him the serpent right from the beginning. But I think Adam and Eve didn't see him as a serpent. They saw him as a beautiful, majestic creature of some kind.
Well, that would explain a lot, because that was the first and last time a woman trusted a man, and they haven't trusted her since.
So. Well, there's that underlying theme again.
I have a hard time, just because it's like, if God didn't intend this, like if it was so perfect with just after he created Adam and they had fellowship, and you know, Adam would walk around the gardens and name the animals or whatever. Mm-hmm. If it was so perfect, why did he create a woman for Adam? And if that was the case, then why would he allow Lucifer to wander around in the garden? Like, it was just like, it was a total setup.
Bingo. I'm with you, sister.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know.
And it goes back to what's his intention here?
Well, if all of us humans are expressions of God, then he needed a woman to make some more expression of himself or something. I don't know, Beth. You raise a question. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he created woman, you know, because we were going to need to procreate.
Right.
And, you know, he had created, I'm assuming, I don't recall it really getting specific about this, but of all the animals that he had created, I'm assuming he must have created male and female, mm-hmm. so that they could multiply. Yes,
the Bible says that.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he makes a statement, it's not that good that man should be alone. Mm-hmm. And I don't think God just wanted to be reflected through one person.
Mm-hmm. That's the point. Yeah.
You know, by the procreation, and this is why I have a hard time with people saying, oh, well, there's like 14 different characteristics of God or something, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, God is infinite. So God mm-hmm. is reflected. God is showing his infinite by all the people he's ever created.
Sure.
Because every one of us is capable of expressing God in a different way.
Exactly. And
okay, just real quick, but also like if God's intent before, you know, they chose the tree of knowledge, which, you know, then it's got the death sentence to it or whatever, was his original intent for Adam and Eve to just live eternally on earth? Was it infinite life then, if now they're in a state of decay after? And if that's the case, and then they procreate, and then everyone, then, you know, earth was way too small to begin with. Well,
wasn't the earth at that time really a picture of what we today call heaven? Because as you get into the New Testament, none of us are going to heaven. We're going to be on the new earth because God's mm-hmm. going to create a new heaven, a new earth. Mm-hmm. And we're going to reside on the earth. Mm-hmm. Okay. So again, it's trying to wrap your mind around how infinite God is.
Mm-hmm.
And
stop that.
You know, I mean, all these billions of people that have lived and will live, if we're going to end up on a new earth, because again, I still am not convinced anybody's going to hell. I just don't mm-hmm. believe that okay. anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this new earth is going to be quite the place.
Sure. I agree with you. It's going to resemble everything of the garden, everything the garden.
I think it's going to be yeah. better than all the hotels in Las Vegas.
So let me come back to that question you posed. Why did God form a woman out of man? Remember, he looked at all of his creation. And he said it was good. Does that mean here we have to understand the Hebrew, and I'm interested in what concordance says, David. I'm going to have to get my own edition of it. What is the word used there for good? The actual Hebrew the background of that word is not as we understand it, is moral, right or wrong, is not in that context. The context is order, proper function. And so when God said, let there be light, he said, and it was good. In other words, light was fulfilling its proper order or function in the universe. When God created or formed a woman, where it said it was not good that man be alone, what he was saying, this isn't natural for him. Everything else of the species and that he's created has a mate. It's not functionally correct for Adam to be by himself. He needs a complement. He needs the opposite sex. And of course, as we know, God wanted them to procreate, fill the world is what he was telling them to do. And in that context of being good, everything would function properly. We only understand population and overpopulation to the standpoint of disorder. But what if God's perfect plan would accommodate populating the whole world in the natural way that he had designed it? See, we don't understand it from that perspective. We've never been there. That's only for God. That's his infinite knowledge. How he could, his earth that he had created would accommodate billions of people being produced.
See, Part of the struggle that we have, I think, and this is why I enjoyed N.T. Wright's book on Paul,
mm-hmm.
is that it has helped me divorce myself from today's theology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go back to first century Christianity. How did the Jews see God?
Mm-hmm.
How did they understand creation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and if we go back to first century Christianity, we also have to divorce ourselves from today's way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
See, I mean, you've got this movement, the cancel culture, who wants to cancel history.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard these naive people state, well, if I would have lived back in the 1800s or the 1600s, I would have, and they would have done it much better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, you wouldn't have, because you can't go back in time and take today's thinking with you.
Right.
You know, if yeah. you were raised in the 1600s, you would have done it like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you can divorce yourself from today's way of thinking,
mm-hmm.
understanding the Bible is going to be very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Because
okay.
remember, this book wasn't written when it came off the printing press, it was written a little bit before that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
Yep. And that's what we are discovering in this revelation of Christ in us, as us. We're getting back to that original mystery that's been so shrouded and changed, as I say, particularly since the fourth century, and even prior to that, beginning as early as the second century, you had the alteration happening of the original truth. Man's ideas and man's doctrines and man's philosophies were starting to enter in, and you might call it the revisionist theology. So,
yeah. I mean, you, you know, it's, let's see, when was the first crusade? That was in...
Yeah, not until about the 10th, huh? 10 centuries, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And what did the Catholic Church do during the crusades? Mm-hmm. They discovered that they were getting their butts kicked by Islam because the Islamic soldiers knew that if they died, they were going to heaven. You know, if we die, we're martyred, we're going to heaven, we get our 70 virgins, whatever. So the church started telling the Christian soldiers that if you die in battle, it's a good thing, you're going to be martyred, you're going to heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had to come up with a reason to go into battle.
To motivate men to stand up and fight, yeah.
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 So,
yeah.
You know, when we look at history, and even Paul was up against this,
mm-hmm.
okay, that what Jesus taught, even in Paul's day, was starting to be distorted.
So that brings us to this point he says in Romans 1:25, who have altered the truth, who altered the truth of God into the lie. That's somewhat convicting, because I realize, as a preacher of the gospel, so to speak, or Bible teacher, I may have been perpetuating this revision, this altering of the truth.
Well, no may about it.
No,
I don't mean that. But then haven't we
okay,
all?
Okay, I'm guilty. I agree.
I mean, I did too, you know, as yeah, I was discipling these young men. And
we were all part of it. If you were raised, I don't care if you're Roman or Protestant, you were all part of these environments that were perpetuating an alteration of the original truth. We talked about that, and we go, what is not as God? There's God and not as God. I see so many ways that we were teaching not as God. We were teaching about a God who's really not the true God. But it was an image we'd created, and we had accommodated this theology to work for us so that we could still be in charge. Now, as you say, point out, Dave, there was the original truth, and the truth was, here are two trees. The one represents life, and the one represents what?
Death.
Death. If you eat it, you will die, God says. So one is life and one is death. And as you look at that, as we've talked before, is that not metaphorically or symbolically true about God? There's a side of God that is life, and anything on the other side is death. Anything not God is death, is nothing. So the two trees represents the opposites of who God is. And by the way, what's the meaning of knowledge of good and evil? And as I said earlier, a few moments ago, it does not, the Hebrew, you will know, you'll read, does not imply moralistic legislation. In other words, what's bad and what's good. Hebrew is in terms of what is correct order, what's the natural process of things, and what is the unnatural
Dennis, where does the lukewarm Christian fit into this whole
thing? and Jerry, that goes back to what we talked about. Do we have the right to say, no, I won't choose either? To profess that, God says, that is totally enough. I'm spewing you out of my mouth. I'd rather you be one or the other. To proclaim that you can be lukewarm and stand on the fence in between is an actual affront to me, that you think you have your own will and you are free to choose. You see why we, that goes back to the whole issue of free will. Who do you think you are, man? You could stand on the fence between one another. That's a blatant affront to God. Do you think there's a third alternative? There isn't a third alternative. There's only two.
But then along comes Jesus. Uh-huh. And he ends all that in uh-huh. that there is no self, not myself.
Mm-hmm.
Myself is God.
Yeah.
And I'm a reflection of God, and there is one self.
Only one self. And he dies to that notion that man is a self to his own, that he's independent. He takes that on upon himself. That's why at the cross, he indicates what that self and independence implies. God, where are you? For the first time in his life, he experiences separateness, a break in the union with God.
So now we're back to the tree of life.
Exactly. Okay. But how do you know that unless you taste of the other?
Which we have.
Exactly. We have no choice about it. It was chosen for us.
Yes.
However, as you bring out, Arnold, that's the very reason Jesus comes, is to reverse the action of the first Adam. Last week, you mentioned Jesus as the second Adam. That's the purpose of the second Adam, is to change the destructive power of the first couple, of the first Adam.
Except now we have knowledge of that.
Now we have been reconciled back to the Father.
Yeah.
Right? To understanding order and understand, even though we still live in this environment, nothing has changed in terms of the environment. The environment is still in the throes of decay and destruction, but we understand life and we can live above that destruction.
That's where all in all comes in, right?
Exactly.
We shift into that gear, and that's our driving force.
So the first part of that lie that Satan gives is, no, you won't die. He knew full well. Yes. But how do you, and here's Satan, he's in total rebellion. He wants to be God. And so he's going to try to convey to others to join him, to follow him. And so what does he have to do? He's the master of deceit. I'm going to convince you that you can join my little forces and we're going to be opposite of God, which is in itself is a total delusion. What happens when, if you don't live in God as God, what's the alternative? You don't live in life. You live in
darkness.
Is death, disorder, decay, destruction, deterioration, right? That's the other side. No, you will die. Now, Jeff points out the fact that no, they didn't suddenly die mortally, but weren't they decaying? Wasn't there ruin and destruction?
Yeah.
Forces of decay setting in, not only on their lives, but all of creation. The Bible says all of creation was subjected to death. And that's going to be incumbent on us to release to show the union with God to such an extent, Romans 8:21, that we're going to help liberate all of creation out of the cycle of deterioration, back to its original order. This is good stuff, but it's so profound, guys.
When Satan first fell,
yeah,
God looked into his heart, and what did he find there? What did he say, why Satan? Do you remember that? Well,
I don't. I'm not quite following. But.
Well, did he found that Satan was self. He looked in his heart. He found it somehow. Satan was self-centered, or hung up on himself. I can't remember what that.
Well,
that scripture said.
I'm led to think. I think it's Isaiah 7, if I have that right, in which he describes Lucifer.
Okay. Lucifer. Yeah.
And he describes him there. Isaiah does prophetically describes him as having his own will. I will. I think like 7 or 8 times that phrase is used there as the vernacular of Satan. Expressing his own will. And essentially, his desire is, I will be God.
Yeah.
He wanted to replace God. Now, how delusional can you be when you're a created being and you can replace God?
Are you calling me delusional?
Well, I am.
So, Dennis... Dennis, when you get in these, like the self-realization philosophy,
mm-hmm.
then is that more or less saying like I'm God? If my self-realization is I'm almost narcissistic, you know, I'm the best.
Okay.
Look at the mirror and I'm the greatest, right?
Yeah.
So are you projecting a little God in yourself there?
Boy, isn't that the essence of what we're talking about? I think I'm an independent. I can self-actualize. I can be self-determining. And I listened to myself in the past. If you believe it, you can achieve it.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I have a question.
Whew.
Yeah.
So if Lucifer or and all the angels were the perfect creation of God,
mm-hmm.
where did his corruption come from? Where did his how did that mindset come about? Like it was pre-choice, it was pre-tree, it was pre.
I was thinking the same thing. Thanks for asking, Beth. That's great.
good research project, guys. Go back into the scriptures and find where it says that God has given that ability to Lucifer and all the angels to choose.
So that was like a prototype, and then he still went through with it on Earth, you know?
Yes.
Like
yes.
We were doomed.
Yes. You know that all of this, it says even before the foundations of the world, Christ died.
Wow.
That blows your mind.
Hmm.
So what does that indicate? Guys, even before this all happened or appeared on earth, there's already the solution to the problem that had been worked out. So this thing didn't transpire and God had no problem. He had to let it go. No, he had already the plan.
Mm-hmm.
Christ died before the foundations of the world. He did?
So we're actually moving backwards.
You're right. Yeah. So, wow. Here's Satan now being allowed to perpetrate what he in his own heart has conceived. No, I'm not going to die. I'm going to affront God. I'm going to say God's a liar. Anytime we determine, I can do what I want to do. I'm the master of my own destiny. That's a blatant lie and affront to God. As we read, man can make his plans, but God determines the outcome. It's Proverbs 16:9, I think it was.
We plan and God laughs, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the substance of the lie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So here's the second part. For God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened. See, he's trying to foist onto Eve and Adam the idea that God is being deceptive and purposely hiding something from Adam and Eve. He doesn't want them to know something. And so Satan is very crafty here, and he's saying, no, you're going to have your eyes open, and you're going to see something that God is holding from you. And you will be like God, knowing good and evil.
Well, so that goes back to my earlier question.
Mm-hmm.
Did we need to know?
Do we need to know?
or did we already know?
Well, we're winding down here, guys, but let me, remember, David, I wanted you to read Genesis 3:22 in the Concordant. Here's what Genesis, jump ahead to 22. I'm getting rushed here.
Hang on 1 second. Beth, you had a thought there. What were you?
Oh, I was just thinking, I wonder if Satan really thought it was a lie. Like, if God had given him the ability to see, you know, if mm-hmm. was he really mm-hmm. telling a lie, or was he just pushing them because he was cast out of the heavenly realm? And
so
it's like he believed it. This is what I'm trying to say. Like,
yeah, and was he then guilty of altering the truth himself? Did he really know what was the truth and just chose not to accept it? He has to be in the same category that everyone knows. There's no excuse. Everyone knows the truth. That's what Paul says. There's no one, and there's no defense. It's, oh, I never knew God. No. Satan knew. Mm-hmm. And that also is implied in this statement. He's actually he's going contrary to what he knows. And this is the whole, what happens when you start believing untruth. What are they saying? That if you get to be a sociopath, now the lie becomes truth to you.
He got caught up in his own lie.
Yeah. And did God give him over to that?
Apparently. Yeah, he did.
If it's true for us, it had to be true for Satan.
Yeah.
If that's the choice you make, you go ahead. I'm giving you over to it.
Then that we can just rejoice about the whole thing.
Oh man.
Yeah.
So look ahead at this is an interesting statement that God makes in a little later, and we're jumping ahead, and we'll undoubtedly let's come back to this next week and chew on some more. And I think more light comes on and more unfolding of this revelation. We think, wow, where is this going? Is this an unending argument? No, I think there is ways that as we chew on this, our hearts are enlightened to understand how we know God. Genesis 3:22, behold, the man has become like one of us to know good and evil. Now let's read it in the only version that really, I think, aside of what I want to hear in the concordant, was Young's. If you have a internet option to go into a Bible search, find Young's literal translation. Listen to this, what it says. And it really sheds some light. The man was as one of us. Not become. Man was as one of us as to the knowledge of good and evil.
Wow.
So let me explain what I think what Young is getting at in the translation. Man already was one with God, already the same as God. Or I say, I should not say same, but was functioning inside of God as he was intended to be. Remember what Adam, he'd been given tremendous authority. Go name all the species, superintend, have dominion over the fish. There was tremendous authority and privilege that Adam had in that original functioning with God. And he was giving or realizing his partnership with the Creator in a beautiful symmorphic connection there. Now he's wanting, Young says, the man was as one of us as to the knowledge of good and evil, as to the knowledge of order and disorder and creative function, the understanding of how things operate, right? And only God is omniscient and has the ability to keep things in perfect order and harmony in the universe. And Adam was a part of that. He was participating as God's vessel, as his instrument. Now, God says he wants to be same as one. He was one of us. Now he wants to be the same as us. In other words, Adam wants the creative function and ability to understand all of the harmony and order of things. He wants to be creator.
He
wants the role.
Adam was all in God.
Already. But Satan is convincing him that he can go even more beyond that and be creator himself. I can be the master of and order my life. Remember, and we're not talking about what's good and what's right, although that's maybe a part of it, but it's deeper than that. I want to master over my destiny. I want to make perfect order out of my free will and independence. Okay? Being independent from God brings disorder, brings death, but man thinks that he can bring order out of that. Every man chooses sin not because he wants to destroy himself, because he thinks it's going to be better for him. Isn't that right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun sin out there.
There's something right. I don't think anybody goes, is disobedient or say, participates in alternative lifestyles on the idea, this is quick death. This is how I'm going to destroy myself. No, he thinks, I can handle this. I want to enjoy this and believe it's not going to alter me. It's not going to harm me.
Yeah. Well, the alcoholic or the thief that becomes a professional thief.
Yeah.
Does he not think that?
No.
I would guess.
Yeah. Remember the story? This is the simple story that Jesus told about the prodigal son.
Yeah.
What did the son think?
I'm going to go have fun.
I'm going to. Yeah. Hey, why not live it up? I've got all the power. I've got all Dad's money. He's given it to me. Why not?
Yeah.
But what did it bring?
It brought separation from his father.
Yeah.
Brought him to his knees eventually.
So his man thinks that he can have this right and privilege to be the master of his own destiny and have no disorder in his life, no deterioration, no harm. He lives in an illusion. Last week we ended with my challenge to you to go to 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 5 and to get a little insight into God's purpose here. What happened to the prodigal when he went off to live in the pigsty? Did the father have to disown him? Did you just give him up to that?
Never.
Unconditional love.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing as you read and look into them in between the lines in that story.
My wife would have.
What did the prodigal finally realize? While he's chewing on a corn cob in the middle of mud and filth, he comes to an awakening.
A good lifestyle.
His eyes are open. Wait a minute. Paul, there was a problem in the first century church in Corinth. Corinth had its shares. It was a pagan city, an environment to live in. And here comes Christianity. And Paul is preaching to that pagan, ungodly environment. And here's this little fledgling body of believers. And it became known quite obviously that a man has his stepmother. I mean, he's going to bed with his own stepmother. And Paul calls the church out. You all know this. And what does Paul say? What's the instruction for the church to handle this? Give up such a one to Satan for the extermination of the flesh. So that what? So that he will be rescued. His spirit will be rescued. What's the... We're getting ahead in our story here a little bit, but it helps us get a little bit more of an insight as to, wow, the destruction of the lie. But what is God's intention here? Man, and maybe, hopefully next week we'll talk about this whole issue of the effects and the plight of what in verse 24 through 32 of the plight of uncleanness. Everything is turned around. What is natural now becomes unnatural. So read ahead in this latter portion of chapter 1 of Romans, Genesis 3. I hope you'll find it challenging and stimulating instead of, this is just mud.
Yeah.
Okay. And something in us is awakening to the truth, and our eyes of our understanding are further opened. Satan's lie was that your eyes are going to be open, when in fact what happens is their eyes were blinded. Because in 2 Corinthians, Paul says, we pray that the eyes of they have been blinded by Satan. It's just reverse. Your eyes are going to be now blinded. That's the truth. Everything is upside down from this point on. Everything is against the natural order. Everything now is disorder. And man thinks he can bring order out of disorder. There's only one that can do that. There's only one.
I wonder if Satan realized that he was in that predicament himself.
You know what? Right on, Arnold. I think, wow, he knew his fate, but I'm going to take down as many as I can with me. That was his whole, and we'll see that a little later in this passage. That when you start believing the lie so bad, you want others to be with you. Isn't that the way it is? That everybody that's in an alternate lifestyle likes to have company.
Misery loves company, right?
Yeah. Hey, guys, got to let you go.
Hey, we got to let you go.
Well, thank you, Dennis.
This was good. Thank you.
Have a good week, all.
Hey, have a good week. Keep pondering, keep questioning, keep searching.
Amen.
Grace to everybody.
Amen.
Bye-bye.
I know.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.